Hey everybody, this is Justin Case, and I'm here with my partner in crime, Ben Stape. This is episode 17 of the Pod Rock Podcast, and we're glad to be back. We've got some current events we're going to share today, and some topics that Ben and I have been stewing about this week. And that all being said, Ben, what you got for us, man? What you got for current events?
Yeah, so a lot of good music news, at least in my opinion. A lot of new albums are coming out. One of them I kind of wanted to get your opinion and topic on, because I know Rick Beato kind of talked about Extreme and, you know, Betancourt. So I guess that'd be one of them. They have a new album out, which it's been years. And one of the best songs I think I've heard from them in a long time, obviously, just not just because the hiatus, but, you know, music wise, Rise. And the solo on there is being compared to Eddie Van Halen in his style. And yeah. One thing that Rick Beato was talking about was who's going to take the mantle, right? I mean, Eddie, iconic. Who could actually step up and fill a role in a music scene of rock music and guitar playing? And I think his opinion was that Nuno was the guy. And you can see a lot of that in that solo. There's a video out there for the song itself, if you're interested in seeing it. Live version as well, if you want to check him out playing the solo live, which is pretty cool. So I wanted to get your opinion on Nuno Betancourt, Extreme, because it's been a while since they've had an album out. And I didn't know if you got into them, if you were kind of a fan, not a fan.
I could really cut loose on all cylinders on this, not only the band, but Nuno Betancourt. And also I did watch the video. First off, I'm going to say, where have people been? He's always played like this. That solo is not a surprise to me. But what is a surprise is that, I understand that maybe some of the younger audience didn't really listen to the back catalog. I get it. But hopefully this is a pathway to listening to their back catalog, particularly the first two albums. The third one's pretty good too, Three Sides of a Story. I like that one as well. The thing is that he never stopped playing like this. He's been a Generation X here in the last 5 years. It's not like he just was in a basement and just came out in the front, forefront and did this. It's because people only know YouTube videos and social media now. But to which I say, for people who aren't initiated, he's always played like this. And they've always been a great band. And they put out an album. They put out a couple albums over the last several years that no one gave a sniff to. So I guess maybe the time is ripe. It's a better timing. I don't know. But they've always been like this. It's not a surprise to me. He's a fantastic player. The whole band is great. I'm a big Gary Cherón fan. And
absolutely.
I mean, what else is there to say? They're one of the best bands out there. They always have been. And great thing about Extreme is they're not a band that you could put in a category. People have tried, but they can't, because these guys do their own thing. Not only can they sing vocal harmonies, but they do it in their own way. They try to compare them to Aerosmith because they're both kind of Bostonian based. You know what I mean? But I mean, for me as a listener, they're their own thing, and it's great. You've got the percussiveness of Nuno's playing, and but the thing is, my point is that they've never stopped. I mean, they all had their side projects, and maybe they've gone, a while between albums, but it's really funny. Even someone like Rick Beato, who should be well aware of how these guys sound, his answer should be, well, they've always sounded like this. They're always great. It's just that now they picked the right time, or, maybe it was good fortune on their part to decide to jump back in there. It's not like they haven't been doing anything. They've all stayed busy with other projects.
Yeah, I think one of their, I wouldn't say it's their downfall. I think most people know them for the song More Than Words, right?
Well, yeah, and that's a short-sighted fact. Yeah, I mean, it's not the band's fault. It's the general public.
It's a great song. The vocals are amazing on it. But if you were to base the band off of that song alone, or even Wholehearted, you would think they're more kind of a, acoustic, rock kind of band with that, you know, the ballad kind of flavor to it. And if you were to go back and listen to Porno Graffiti, the whole album from beginning to end, I think I agree with what you're saying. You would understand that Nuno's one of those players that he's not just a basic chord kind of player when he plays his music. You know, he's like an Eddie Van Halen. There's fills that are basically the song. It's almost like a solo for every single track that you're doing. And to me, I think that's what made him stand out to me back then. And even now, they really kind of have, you know, they just have that vibe, you know, that total vibe they had back then. I don't think they're making any excuses or changing their style. I think, like you're saying, Nuno's doing what Nuno does, which is melt faces, bend guitar strings. And, you know, he's always been that kind of flavor of guitar player at the Eddie Van Halen level for his style, in my opinion, too. So I would agree with you wholeheartedly. So if you haven't checked it out, check out Rise from Extreme. Great song. Check out the album themselves. Gary Schroen was even in Van Halen for one album. Was it Van Halen 3, I think, right?
That's correct. And I liked it. And I appreciate all eras of Van Halen. I don't care if people like the fact that I like 3 or not. Doesn't matter to me. I remember I had that album in high school. Well, I still have it. But, I mean, that's when I was listening to it. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, it's an Eddie Van Halen solo album, and which I don't think is necessarily fair to the other members. But it was a big departure, and you get like Fire in the Hole, and you've got like, you know, got some soundtrack, you know, play from, was it Lethal Weapon 3? I think it was on that soundtrack. Yeah, it was on the Lethal Weapon 3 soundtrack.
Was it 3 or was it 4?
It was whatever, the one with Joe Pesci when he dyed his hair blonde, was it 4?
I think so. It might. It's been so long since I
saw it. It was 1998. So that's what I can tell you is 1998 is when that album came out. So I was like, spring, it was like January, February 98. But at any rate, I like you can catch some of their live shows from that era on YouTube. And it, like, there's this live from the 10 spot, I think they actually kicked off their tour in 1998-99 in Australia, and it was actually MTV put a huge amount of heat behind that album. I mean, they promoted the crap out of it. You know, Matt Pinfield was pushing them and all these things. So at any rate, yeah, I mean, I think it's great to see Extreme back in and Gary Schroen. Kind of, these guys get some cred and get some exposure, and it just goes to prove a point that if you give people, if you put it in front of the people, they're going to dig it. And people, there's still a huge love for guitar and rock music in this country. And when the powers of the musical be decide they want to start promoting rock music again, they'll show up, folks. They will show up. And another point to that would be, what's that festival that's in Maryland every year? It's the, I'm trying to remember. I think it's the second year they've done it, but they've got kind of like a festival of 80s bands, late 80s bands. But it's kind of funny. Anyway, it's a separate topic. But yeah, I mean, there's a market for it. Even if you got to put them all together at a festival, people will show up. They'll buy VIP tickets. They'll buy whatever you want. So I think it's great. I hope that this whole thing with Extreme is a step in the right direction for getting some guitar-based music out there, because quite frankly, the other kind of styles of music out there, there are no other styles of music. It's all just EDM and club beats and just auto-tune. It's garbage. That's my opinion.
It's pretty droney. I think a lot of the music that's out now is definitely getting to a point where it's all trying to sound the same. Right.
Well, and all styles kind of do that. I mean, even with the bands in the 80s, late 80s, they were like that. The grunge bands all sounded the same. You know, every kind of, I'll say path of music tends to start sounding the same. And that's when it's time to change her up a little bit. So, but yeah, I mean, the pioneers will always have their sound, and Extreme has definitely carved that niche. And I'm just glad to see him back out there again. And that's all I have to say about that, really.
Yeah. So another another new album, Metallica, 72 seasons. I don't know. It's been like 6 years since they put their last one out.
And time flies.
I liked it. I was surprised that they went back to more of their kind of thrash. It is definitely, to me, a mix of their like 80s, the early sound.
You mean Megaforce record sound?
Yeah. Well, the song.
On Megaforce record! Kill 'em all! Yeah.
Lexi Turner reminds me a lot of their Kill 'em All album. Right. But other songs on there definitely have, you know, the salt and pepper of everything they've kind of gone through in their career, in their music. But Lux Aeterna was the first one I think that they released. One I don't think they have released yet, Too Far Gone, is really killer, really killer tune. It's up, you know, it's fast paced. It'll get you going, get your heart rate up. The other one I really liked was If Darkness Had a Son. That was a really good tune as well. So if, you know, if you're a Metallica fan, check it out. If you're not a Metallica fan, check it out. New music. You know, as Justin's saying, try to give something different than the oomps, oomps, oomps beat, you know, or the everybody trying to be Post Malone sounding music and give, you know, rock music a chance again. The other album, there's a full female band called Plush. They're going to release their second album. Their first album was really good. I was pleasantly surprised when I listened to the full album that they had put out. So I'm anxious to hear what they're going to do on their second one.
It's not a Stone Temple Pilots reference, is it?
No, not at all. They've actually been touring for like a year and a half. They've toured with people like Evanescence. They toured on a festival. Seven Dust was on it. Their Seven Dust people.
Oh, geez, that's a blast from the past. Wow.
Yeah. Well, Seven Dust is still making music too.
And sure.
They haven't stopped. And they're one of those other bands that, you know, they are unapologetically Seven Dust. They will put out music that ultimately will always sound like Seven Dust, which is great. Even though it has their spin in a little bit different style, it's still Seven Dust, and you can tell it is. Big fan of theirs. So here's here's one I thought you would find really funny and interesting. Vince Neil is going to judge a singing competition.
Why?
Yeah, let that sink in for a minute. So I'm going to bring up the whole controversy that's going on with Motley Crue right now, where their guitar player had medical issues, Mick Mars has stepped away from touring. He said he would totally be in for doing new music in the studio, and they let him go. And then there was this big controversy about how there's backtracking in concerts when they play live, which that was one thing I wanted to bring up and talk to you about. But Vince Neil, the fact he's going to be singing and judging a singing competition is, I don't know. It's very shocking to me. That guy can't sing anymore. It's like he's out of breath after two words every time I've ever seen anything live. So having said that, what I wanted to do was get your take on the fact that a lot of bands do have backtrack. They have click track in the inner ear monitors. What is your take on that? And when you go and see a band live, how do you feel about it? Or how would you feel about it if you knew that a lot of the sound that's coming out was played on an audio instead of the actual instrument?
If I want to listen to the CD, I'll stay home. That's all I have to say about that.
Okay, I guess the topic is over.
No, I mean, that's the gist of it. If I was paying to see, if I went to the trouble of possibly driving hours to see a band, if I really like them, and it sounded like the CD, then I wasted my time. And if you can't sing anymore, either go address the issue or change the key of the songs to fit a register you can sing. And if you can't sing, then you need to address that as well. And you need to decide, am I giving a quality performance that is actually live to the fans? If I'm unable to do that, then you have to really make some hard choices. And I understand that there's people that they sing for a living. They sing for their dinner, as David Lee Roth says. Okay. But everything takes its toll. We're human beings, we're flesh and bone, and we all age, and we all eventually, and there's strain on the vocal cords. Everyone's different. Some people are able to do it much longer. Glenn Hughes is an example of that. Just an amazing range and Glenn Hughes is just incredible. But there's some folks that aren't able to do that. It'd be like saying, well, it'd be like having a guitar player. Look at Mick Mars. I mean, he was very honest about his social, or excuse me, his physical status as a player. And he's like, I mean, the guy's in his 70s, and he's tapping out from playing live. A vocalist is also an instrumentalist, and if you can't do the job live and you're without backing tracks, then it's probably time to hang her up. Unfortunate, and as hard of a choice it is to make, I think you owe it to the fans to, if you can't sing for real, then you're not singing at all. Okay? I went and saw Kiss back in 2000. That was 23 years ago. And at the Syracuse War Memorial. And Paul Stanley could sing like a banshee. He was amazing. And he swung out on this little stirrup thing hanging from the ceiling. He put his platform shoe, platform boot in the stirrup and came right out into the middle of the crowd where I was. He was on a platform and sang a solo section just by himself and played guitar. And I think it's the opening part. It was a segment that he broke off as a solo thing for, I think it's I Still Love You, right? Which is a really intense song. And he was singing it all himself. There's no backing track because I was sitting right there and I could see his mouth match the inflections that were coming through on the audio system and on the microphone. Because the guy was like 50 years old, he could still sing really well. I was blown away. And it's always stayed with me. Now, I've seen other bands where I can't hear the vocalist because the monitors are too loud and the instruments are too loud. They didn't do a very good sound check.
So I think you touched a topic right there, the nuances, right, that you get to experience live when you hear somebody sing or you hear a guitar player.
You're spoiled after that. You are spoiled.
Right. And when you're in a studio, you're capturing a moment, right? A moment in time in the studio, or you're going back and you're playing it and you're getting it perfection. Not that people shouldn't know how to play their songs. And I think we had a podcast on, you know, nowadays recording versus older day recording where you had to play all the way through. If you messed up, you had to start all over.
Right. So it should
it's those nuances, I think, that stand out for me when you hear either extended bits of songs that, you know, they do it live and they play it live because they can, right? And you hear a song on a radio, like, okay, for instance, Foghat has three different versions or two different versions of their song Slow Ride. There's a 3 minute and 41 second song, and then there's an 8 minute song, right?
Nice.
If they did the 8 minute song live and they had this whole bass solo and the, you know, slide guitar work in there, if they played that live, I'd be like, yeah, there's no backing track going on here because they changed it up in the middle of the song and did something different. Right.
Right.
I get click tracks for some reasons, right, in the inner ear monitors to make sure that some of the songs have stops or starts and you want to make sure that everybody's starting on the same time. Right. Mm-hmm. The backing vocals is kind of disappointing. The backing guitar tracks or backed bass track or drum track, those are disappointing to me. When I want to go and see a band live, I want, you know, not that they're not out there moving their hands and arms and trying to do what they do, but it's almost kind of a letdown, you know, in a way.
Well, if you don't have a rhythm player, then you better make sure. Now, this is if you want legitimate performance, okay? Make sure that when you're writing these songs that you can pull them off live with just one player.
Absolutely. Now,
there's plenty of instrumentalists that have no vocalist to hide behind. Like, let's see. Joe Satriani did it for years. A prime example of someone who doesn't have a rhythm player, at least for the longest time back in the 80s and 90s, was Yngwie Malmsteen. He didn't have a rhythm player, nor would he. That wasn't how he rolled. He's the guy. And so the bass and the keyboards and the drums would play the riff as if there was a third, a second guitar player there. Mumsy just played the solos over the bass parts. That's all he does. That's all he does now.
That I think that, to your point, you know, if you're recording something, do it to where you can do it live. You know, if you're going to have two guitar tracks, okay, do it. When like, and I know Chuck Lynch is going to, he's going to lynch me for this. Alice in Chains on their acoustic set, they brought in Scotty Olsen to play the second guitar, the rhythm guitar, so that Jerry could play the solos, right? In the songs that took two guitars to fill it out. They didn't just play on a backing track to fill that in. They actually brought someone in to do it, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that they're acoustic songs, because trying to do a solo on that, you know, acoustic based like music, at least particularly where guitar is involved, is you'll see a lot of players that like jazz guys that can self accompany themselves where they can actually fulfill rhythm guitar duties and play the lead parts, voice leading, those kind of things at the same time. But that's not single note playing necessarily. That's voice leading, and that's a different style of play, which obviously Alice in Chains is, that's not in their, well, at least publicly, not their skill set. That's why you have to bring in another player. It's acoustic, you know.
Right.
And I think that with electric music, because it's so loud, the bass has the rumble, the drums have the crash and the pounding, you know, and they're able to get by without another electric player because the rhythm section is so loud anyway.
It does what it's supposed to do. It's exactly. The rhythm section, right? And it the mixing is done well enough that the bass is prominent enough that when you hear the solo over it, it fills that gap. So when you're hearing it, most of your attention usually goes to the solo, but you still have that bass rhythm going, and it's loud enough and mixed well enough that it doesn't distract you from the solo, but it makes you, you know, sensitized to what the rhythm track would have been if there was another guitar solo or another, sorry, not solo, but rhythm guitar playing in it.
Well, in Mr. Big's like that. You've got Billy Sheehan, bass player extraordinaire. Not only does he have amazing bass chops, but his tone is just a bone crushing.
Oh, he's a monster.
Yeah, and his the tone that he has sculpted with his bass is, he uses an Ampeg setup and Ampeg bass, and his, you know, Billy Sheehan Punisher, not that's Gene Simmons. Gene Simmons has the Punisher bass, or at least he did. You know, Billy Sheehan's got the Yamaha Attitude signature bass he's got. It's incredible. But most of the sound comes from the amp. He's got that scrambler circuit in there. Paul Gilbert's guitar tone complements the bass perfectly. And so between the two of them, they've got this sound, this rhythm sound, where Paul Gilbert can shred like nobody else, and they're so locked and so tight as a unit, as a band. And, I mean, Billy Sheehan is a rhythm guitarist because of the way he plays and the tone from his bass. And so, I mean, there are bands that can do that. You know, I think it's interesting. A band like Winger has added a second guitar player. So you've got Reb Beach freed up to play all these solos. And then this is in the studio and live. They added a new guitar player, and I don't know the gentleman's name off the top of my head, but he's a tried and true player. And I think he actually went and did a few stints with, I think, Dokken when George Lynch was out. But I'd have to check on that. But, and it wasn't John Norm, because John Norm's, he's filled in, he's kind of taken the place of George Lynch in like the 2000s, maybe early 2000s, or maybe it was after A Racist Slate when Reb Beach was there, because those guys always rotate to different bands and everything. But, you know, Winger was a guy, George Lynch, or Dokken's another band. Reb Beach was in both bands, and Reb Beach took George Lynch's spot, you know. And so it's like they didn't have a second player. Had Jeff Pilson on bass. The guy had a killer bass tone, you know, and it's just like the drums and everything was just crazy, you know. And so, I mean, this, I guess my point is if you've got a rhythm section, live could pull it off, then you don't need another player. And there's a lot of bands that can do that, and they don't do it playing to a stinking tape. And I think this whole thing started when iPods came out. You know, you had these groups doing like these Oh, can I have more iPod and monitor too, please? That's where it started. It was in the early 2000s when iPods came out, and they're like, oh, we could hook this auxiliary up to the board, and then we can just play over backing tracks. I think it's fine if you're doing a clinic or something, but man, I'm sorry, I'm not going to get behind it. If you suck live, you suck. So go back and practice your songs. Doesn't mean you're a bad player, but you got to rehearse your stuff. And I think that's a lot of it. That could be some of it too, Ben, really, is maybe due to time schedules. They like, well, if we have a backing track, that's less rehearsal we have to do because we can just play single notes over this stuff and make sure we're in time. I mean, I don't know.
It depends
on how much of backing tracks they're using.
Well, okay, so you always bring up interesting topics, which I love talking about this stuff. So looking back, even just recently, I go back and watch videos of music from then being 70s, 80s, even like Tina Turner, God bless her soul, may she rest in peace.
Yes.
She had backup singers. She didn't hit play. She had backup singers, right? And you look back at people like Madonna or even Janet Jackson or some of the pop singers, they had backup singers. They had live guitar players. They had live drummer. And then you go and you fast forward and you look at a lot of the musicians now, you don't even see half a band on the stage anymore, right? And maybe that's the deal. Maybe they're spending more of their money now on their huge video screens to try to get the shock value out of it. And they charge people more money so they can pay for that stuff versus investing in the people to make the audio and the sound more better, unique, and genuine.
Could be. And it's subjective. It's subjective on the band. I mean, some of it's probably like, well, you know, if they're getting older, they just can't do as much. You know, Fleetwood Mac reportedly, I should say reportedly because I've never been to one of their shows, when they were kicking stuff around, they were, I think it was like right after like, you know, COVID started to loosen up and they did shows, they were using background singers in the back. They're behind the curtain, literally behind the curtain. They got backstage. Yeah. I believe when Kiss played, like did Kiss Alive 3, that tour, they had Derek Sherinian behind in the backstage playing keyboards. So, I mean, that he's in the liner notes of the CD, but he wasn't on stage with them. And this is in the early 90s, but
I'd pay to hear that, right? I would pay to go and see.
Well, they were really playing. They were all really playing. It's like, you know, and they're all really back there. It's not, absolutely. It's not a backing track. That's a separate topic, and that's a separate question altogether, which I'm in favor of that because it's still live music.
Yes.
But I don't know why they would put them behind a curtain. I never understood that because it's like, you know, make it look impressive. Make it look like an ensemble, like freaking TSO or something.
Or Dream Theater.
I mean, you're not going to hide the fact that you've got an orchestra. You're going to put them behind a curtain? What Dream Theater did, which I think maybe may have been somewhat telling, is they had the Octavarium Orchestra. So they came out with the Octavarium album, which was fantastic. Like when they did their 20th anniversary, they went to Radio City Music Hall and did with a live orchestra. They had the live orchestra, and they opened the curtains up, and they're right there. The orchestra was, and it was incredible. I mean, why hide the fact? If you might as well flaunt the fact that you're that big that you can have more singers on stage. Why hide it?
I don't get that. I don't know. It's
ego. Like, it's ego.
Okay, Super Bowl. Or any pre-televised show when you're seeing something live, right? I don't get the lip syncing. If you're going to pay someone...
Well, that's hollow trash. So,
if you're going to pay millions of dollars for a musician to come out and do a show, why are you not having them do it live? Why are you?
Because it's pick up and take down time. I think it's because of how fast it is. Everything's blocked off, and it's just optics for sponsoring. It's optics to, you know, and I have my opinions about the Super Bowl and their little ceremonies they do. And I'm not a fan. I don't like the NFL anymore anyway. But I don't like what they represent. And I don't like what some of the people are doing during the halftime shows.
Well, they're even doing this in award shows. There's some award shows out there that still they do the exact same thing. They'll have some.
No, it's right. It's across the board. And they probably got the idea from the award shows.
And I personally do not get that. if I'm going to have someone who has talent come and play and do a song or do a show, I want the genuine person doing the music that I'm paying for. If I wanted to play, hit play, I could put some random dancer on the stage and play the soundtrack or play the CD in the background. And there you go.
Well, right? Yeah. And that goes back to my original point. If I want to listen to the CD, I'll stay home. Okay. Now I've played with some groups that are like, we want it to sound like the CD. And I said, well, if you want that, then you hire some more people to play and we all take our parts and get charts and we start studying every single part. The drummer does his, the bass player does his, the vocalist do theirs, and me as the guitarist, I'll do mine. And then we come back and we do a rehearsal. Do you guys really have the kind of time to do that? I don't think so. Unless you're willing. Yes.
And you got to get tight as a band. You have to learn to play and get timing with each other. That doesn't come from sitting at home by yourself, right? You have to spend time around those people to get adjusted to how those people are, how they play, their timing, their nuances.
It takes a while.
It does. It takes time.
And that's if they can get along and there's a dynamic there. So,
yes.
I mean, yeah, oh, and that's, man, a separate topic. You know.
Yeah. So to loop back to the Motley Crue thing, there was a lot of back and forth going on. Mick Mars said they were telling me I wasn't playing my guitar tracks right when everybody else couldn't play their music right. And I'm like, okay, well, yeah. One, I definitely can tell Vince Neil can't sing anymore because it's like, right? It's almost sounding like, anyway, I won't go into that.
You're right.
But there is a YouTube video out there of the actual inner ear monitors of Mick Mars with the click track and his guitar playing in it. What's interesting to me, you can tell, is playing live. He has nuances. He has different things that you can tell aren't exactly how the album's played, but it is in time. It is played. It is the right notes. Most of the rest of the mix in his monitor is just the click track and his guitar. There's almost no vocals. There's a little bit of bass.
Just for rhythm's sake, yeah.
Right. And his playing is on point. Now, the band went on to say that they got rid of him because he couldn't play live anymore. So then they went and got Johnny Five to play.
When John Five's amazing, he's freaking awesome.
He's a great guitar player in his own right. And it's
oh, great. Man, he's one of the best.
Most people would know him from Rob Zombie.
I know him from the DLR band. He was on he nailed most of a lot of the songs. He did a lot of the guitar stuff on the DLR band CD, which is fantastic, by the way. People should go check it out. You know, it makes me wonder if John Five has agreed to play the backing track. I don't know. Definitely doesn't need to.
No, he doesn't.
That guy's phenomenal. And I think that's he's a cut above the rest of that band, but I'm sure it was a good check, you know.
So I'm going to pose to anybody that listens to this podcast, go out, check it out, see the videos for yourself, leave a comment on Twitter for us, your opinion on what you think of the backtrack vocal issue that happened with Motley Crue. Was an amazing guitar player, still is an amazing guitar player. I think his style for being down-tuned a whole entire step back in the day when rock music was either standard or half-step definitely added to a different flavor for their sound, which made them stand out.
Dr. Feelgood is what comes to mind.
Yes.
That's a heavy riff, man. That they almost got into like metal territory with that song.
Well, they had Bob Rock.
Yeah, there you go. You know,
Bon Jovi, Slippery When Wet made it so big that Bob Rock could pretty much grab any band at that point, right? So they went in the studio. The thing that I find is interesting when you're talking about if you can do it, play it live, play it live. There are so many guitar tracks on that song. They had so many different amps that they mixed to get the sound of the guitar for that album that it would make it very, very hard for it to be 100% the same, right? To me, if I heard them playing it live and it was just them playing it live, I'd be like, wow, okay, yeah, it sounds different, but it's them playing live. So anyway, we can wrap it up. Justin, always a pleasure, as always. Do you want to give kudos out shout out to people?
Yeah, check out the McSauce podcast. Lee and Paul and Matt, they're always good friends. And I need to go and check and see who's still actually doing podcasts these days. But I know Ryan McCormick, he was doing them for a while, but I'm not sure if he's still doing them. I got to check on that. But anyway, check out the McSauce podcast. They're big fans of this show. And check out Hope This Finds You Well. You know, definitely. Excellent podcast. And guys, let us know if you like the quick format, the shorter format or not, if you prefer to have an hour and a half, 2 hours. So let us know in the comments on our Twitter page. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yep. But guys, we really appreciate it, and we'll catch you next time.
All right. Take care.